We have a really good showing today. I see a lot of familiar names of people that I have corresponded with by email. So welcome, everyone. I am going to start today with just a brief introduction of who I am. So my name is Caitlin, and I am the recruitment lead for this region for Sub-Saharan Africa. I'm also our regional lead for the Middle East and North Africa, as well as our Global Scholar Award and the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship. I hosted a webinar last week about Middle East and North Africa, so if there are any attendees here that are interested in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Egypt, you can view the recording of last week's webinar on our website. And then for any that are interested in the Global Scholar Award, I'm going to be hosting a webinar I believe on March 27th for that one. So, but today I'm going to be focusing on Sub-Saharan Africa. So today's presentation will start with just a brief introduction of the Fulbright Scholar Program and the application. And then I'm going to spend a big chunk of time discussing points related to opportunities that are available in the region for the 2020-2021 academic year. And I hope that I'm going to answer many of your questions during the course of the webinar. There's also going to be a question and answer session at the end, during which time you can submit your questions by typing into the questions module, which it looks like many of you have found. But, you know, as we're going through, if questions are coming up, please type them in there. I may stop and answer your questions as we go, or I may save some of your questions for the end. Also, just want to note that if your question is really specific to your particular project or your particular eligibility, then I may save that question for a private follow-up. Okay, so the Fulbright Program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas. Having had his own exchange experience abroad through a Rhodes Scholarship, he was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange for fostering mutual understanding. Actually, using the sale of surplus U.S. government World War II property to initially fund the program, he then introduced the bill into Congress, and it was signed into law by President Truman. The Fulbright Program remains today the flagship international exchange program of the United States government. It is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it is administered in close collaboration with U.S. embassies, Fulbright commissions, and the Institute of International Education, which is the agency that I work for. We administer the program on behalf of the Department of State and the Fulbright commissions. And today the program operates in over 140 countries worldwide, and its alumni include more than 80 Pulitzer Prize winners and 60 Nobel Prize winners. So before we discuss the Sub-Saharan Africa region in more detail, I want to review the basic eligibility requirements for Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards. The Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program is the program that sends American scholars and professionals overseas to conduct teaching and research. If you're interested in the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program, and if you are not a U.S. citizen and you are looking for opportunities to come to the U.S., I'm not going to be presenting on that program today. For the Fulbright U.S. Scholarship Program, U.S. citizenship is required. Permanent resident status or a green card is not sufficient. And then going from there, it will vary by award whether a PhD or other professional or terminal degree might be required. For professionals and artists, recognized professional standing and substantial professional accomplishments are required in lieu of a terminal degree. There are many awards that do not require a PhD. There's actually a way to search in our catalog for opportunities that don't require a PhD if that happens to be the category that you are in. And depending on the award, we may also require teaching experience. That may look like 3 to 5 years of teaching experience, 2 years of postdoctoral teaching experience. It will vary from award to award. And then I also want to mention that there are new policies that govern eligibility as it relates to previous Fulbright U.S. Scholar grants. So if there are any Fulbright U.S. Scholar alumni on the call today, there is a 2-year waiting period between when your previous grant ended and when you would be eligible to apply for another grant. So for example, if your previous award ended in September of 2016, then you would have been eligible to apply again in September of 2018. So what exactly does the application look like? It is pretty straightforward, and the page limits that I mentioned today are hard limits. So if you go over, you'll be hearing from us to modify your application materials during the technical review period. So please read the directions and stay within the page limits. So the application form is all done online. We don't do anything on paper anymore. Yay, environment. We actually are using a new application portal this year. For those of you that have applied in the past, we're no longer using the Embark system. We're using a new system called Slate. So I would say that, you know, we're hoping that it's going to work out better, but if, you know, please be patient with us as we're sort of working out the bugs right now in the new system. For the project statement, we will ask for 3 to 5 pages, and broadly speaking, the document should address what you propose to do, how you propose to do it, why it is important, and what benefits it is going to produce for you, your host, and your home institution. There's a lot of guidance about the project statement, including some prompt questions and samples on our website. You'll also need to submit a tailored CV of up to 6 pages, including a publications list. And then 3 letters of reference are required. If you are proposing to do any kind of teaching, one of the reference letters must address your teaching. So it would, you know, perhaps come from a department chair or another person that has observed your teaching or has been involved in your teaching evaluations. We have requirements for submission of references on our website, but I just want to underscore that applicants must register their referees on the online application, and then the references would be submitted by the referee via the online application. You cannot personally submit a reference for anyone, and we don't accept any mailed in or emailed references. It all needs to go through the application system. So I do advise that you try to get into the application portal and get familiar with it before, you know, the day before the deadline. Make sure that you're giving yourself and your reviewers some time to get those references in through the system. If you're proposing to teach, you will be submitting 2 to 3 sample course descriptions, which would add up to 10 pages. These course descriptions should be designed by you and be expressive of your philosophy of teaching. And they can either have been, you know, courses that you've done previously or something new that you've developed for the application, or a combination of both. Either is fine to us. If you're conducting research, we will need to see a 3-page bibliography, which is really more of like a lit review without excessive annotations. It should reflect the current state of research on the proposed topic and include articles written by scholars other than just yourself. A bit of advice, I've seen some applicants sort of split up the references by categories, broad categories, provide, you know, perhaps 10 articles and then a short description of, you know, these articles are sort of on this theme and they're important for this reason, and then list them. If you have any questions about the bibliography, there's also some guidance on our website about that. And then depending on the award, there may be some language proficiency required. If you are planning to teach, you should confirm with your host institution what the language of instruction is. And then for research projects, a language fluency sufficient to complete the research project is required. So what does that mean? For applicants without any local language proficiency, you need to express the feasibility of conducting research in English in the project statement and in the language self-evaluation form. This means, so if you don't speak French or you don't speak Portuguese or the language that is recommended in the award description, you need to note in those application components whether you plan to work with a translator or if the research can feasibly be completed in English. You know, for example, if you're going to be doing research in a lab and the language of work in the lab is English, then you just need to explain that in your project statement. Ideally, in your letter of invitation, your host would perhaps also explain the letter, you know, the language of instruction to our institution is English, or, you know, whatever. But you just, we need to know that you have thought about the language question and that you've prepared yourself. So for non-native speakers that have language abilities and they are required for your research, so for, you know, for example, if you're going out into the field and you're going to be conducting interviews, there is a two-part language proficiency report. Part one is a self-evaluation, and part two asks you to register an external evaluator within the application. It sort of serves as a fourth letter of reference. There's a short set of questions that this external evaluator would answer, just attesting to your language abilities. So that part of the report would be completed by an appropriate foreign language instructor. It's all done through the application reference system, and an appropriate language instructor, you know, it might be, is there someone on your campus that teaches French or teaches Portuguese that can just talk to you and get a sense of your language skills, and then they would fill out the form for you. And you can also go, if you've had any previous language instruction, you can approach a language instructor that you worked with in the past. If you are an applicant in the fine arts, theater, architecture, film, writing, journalism, there's a list of particular disciplines in which you would need to submit supplemental materials, which is really in the form of a brief digital portfolio. There's information about file types, file sizes, the number of images or videos that you should be uploading, all on our website. Okay, I have a good question here about language. Some awards require language fluency, where others ask for language proficiency. What is the difference between fluency and proficiency? Are there external standards that Fulbright uses to assess language ability? No, we don't have any external standards. All of these award descriptions are written by the host countries themselves. So they are sort of describing, you know, their ideal candidate. I think that language fluency and language proficiency can be interchangeable. It really depends. I think that if there are any questions about your, you know, whether you're fluent or proficient or advanced or intermediate, I think it's a good idea to, when you're talking to your host institution, just to make sure that, you know, if, for example, you're going to be doing teaching, you're teaching in English, and you have conversational French, you know, just check with the host institution to make sure that level of language proficiency is going to be sufficient to complete what you're proposing to complete. If there's any clarification that's needed, you can always reach out to me at the Sub-Saharan Africa at IIE.org inbox, and I can reach out to the Fulbright commissions, the embassies, just to ask them to clarify more. If I applied previously for a Fulbright, can I use the same language evaluation, or do I need to get a new one? Because we're moving into a new application system, your language evaluation is not saved. So you will need to register your external evaluator and have them re-upload the language evaluation that they did in the past. That's fine if they want to use the same one, but it will need to be uploaded by the evaluator themselves. Okay. Are letters of invitation submitted by the host university, or may I upload the letter which was sent to me via email? Okay. I'm going to go into much more detail about the invitation letter in our next slide. The invitation letter is not submitted by the host institution. It is uploaded by you. The other letters, the language proficiency report, and the letters of reference are what would be submitted by the referees. Okay, can you please tell us more about reference letters, especially their content? So that's a really great question. So three reference letters, in terms of content, it would be ideal that you give your referee a copy of your project statement so that somewhere in their letter they're able to talk about your research. But most importantly, I think that the reference letters need to talk about who you are, your character, and what would make you a good representative of Fulbright. On our website, you'll be able to find the review criteria, and I would recommend sending that along to your referees and saying, here is what I'm going to be evaluated on. Can you try to speak to some of these elements in your letter? The review criteria include things like potential for impact and multiplier effect. Personal characteristics, are you flexible, adaptable? I think a lot of applicants make the mistake of trying to get someone that's sort of a big name in their field to write them a letter, but someone that may not necessarily know them very well or know their research very well. I think that's a big mistake. I think what's more important than the name or the rank or the level of fame of the person that writes the letter is really their familiarity with you and their ability to talk about your character extensively. We do also recommend that you try to do sort of a mix of internal and external contacts. So make sure that you have one from your home institution, maybe another from a colleague that is at another institution or a previous institution that you've worked at, and just sort of demonstrate the breadth of your contacts. Okay. These are all really great questions. Thanks. Please keep them rolling in. I'm seeing a lot of questions about the letter of invitation, so I'm going to move on to that slide now. So depending on the award that you apply to, a letter of invitation may be required. You'll see lots of different types of language. You'll see required, you'll see strongly preferred, you'll see preferred, you'll see optional, and in some cases you'll see do not pursue a letter of invitation. You won't find that anywhere in Sub-Saharan Africa with the exception of the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship. But even if it says optional, you're going to be at a really, you're going to be at an advantage if you have the letter of invitation. And considering how far out we are from the application deadline, which this year is September 16th, you have a lot of time to start working on those letters of invitation. So even if it's not required, I recommend that you try to pursue one. So there are not a lot of very specific requirements for the letters. They do need to be on official letterhead. And if the letter is not in English, you need to include an English translation of it along with the original. It should also include the dates which you're being invited for. So if you're going to be there from September to May, it should say that in the letter. But what the letter should include is, you know, what you're being invited to do, the period of time you're being invited for, and then good letters will go a little bit deeper and provide a description of the host's interest in your project and what they expect to be the benefit to their institution as a result of hosting you. So, for example, if they have never had someone with your specialization come to campus and teach this particular course, how that was going to benefit their students. Or, you know, maybe they've never hosted a Fulbrighter before. They've never hosted an American Scholar before, and they're looking at it as, you know, a great experience for their students. You can work with the host institution. As you make those connections and get more comfortable with them, you can work with them to kind of improve the letter as you go on. You can even recommend saying, would it be possible for you to add another paragraph here, sort of talking about, you know, what you think the benefits are to the institution, or if you're planning on doing some additional faculty mentorship or student advising, anything like that. That's also sort of an extra benefit to the host institution. You can ask them to expand, elaborate, and work together on making sure that that letter of invitation is really strong. So how do you get a letter? If you do not have contacts in the country of interest, which many do not, it's very common, or if contact information is not already listed in the award description, which for a lot of awards in sub-Saharan Africa, it often is, we have some recommendations. First is to use the resources on your home campus, such as your international office or, you know, discussing with your colleagues. You can also take a look at our scholar directory, which lists the names, project titles, countries, and host institutions of previous Fulbrighters. So if you just want to get a sense of, you know, where scholars have gone before, it's a really great resource. Also, our alumni are very helpful people. So if you see someone who has previously gone to the country or the host institution that you're proposing to go to, you know, you can, with just a couple of keystrokes, it's alarmingly easy to find faculty emails just using Google. You can reach out to them and ask for an introduction to their contact. They've been in the same position as you. And I'd say 99% of the time our alumni are really happy to help applicants sort of facilitate those relationships for the letters of invitation. And then also Google is your best friend. Look at the university websites in the host country, and oftentimes you can locate contact information for different departments. I personally, us at IIE, we do not keep the names or contact information of any people at specific host institutions unless they're listed in the award description, which you will be able to see. So this part of the application does require some hard work and ingenuity on your part. I always recommend that applicants try to pursue multiple letters of invitation, particularly if they're, you know, they're not sure which university, if they don't have already have contacts at a particular institution. You can always pursue a couple of routes, pursue a couple of letters, and then see what comes back to you, where the best fit is, and which letter is the strongest that you want to include in your application. I'm just reading through some of your questions. I think I answered quite a bit of these about the letter of invitation. Would a letter of invitation from a previous application work, or is a new letter required? So if we have any previous applicants on the call, the letter of invitation from a previous institution would need to be updated with the new dates that you're being invited for. So reach back out to the institution and make sure that they're still willing to host you. You can quickly, you know, change the dates, or maybe even ask them to add more onto the letter of invitation if your project, as you're reapplying, has changed or you've developed any new ideas. So you wouldn't want to use the exact same letter of invitation from a previous application, but you can base the new one on what you'd previously worked on with the host institution. Okay. Could you confirm if this presentation will be posted? Good news. I am recording this presentation, and it will be posted onto our website with the slides and a a video recording of my voice over the slides. It usually takes us about a week to get it up, so you'll be able to find it on our website in the webinar archive. And then I do see a number of questions about who can letters of invitation come from in terms of different kinds of institutions. So that will vary from award to award. If you are applying, most of our awards in Africa will already have predetermined hosts identified. And so you would need, and those typically take the form of universities. So make sure that you're checking the award description. If you're applying to an award that says any appropriate institution, for example, the Africa Regional Award, the Regional Research Award, then in that case, they can come from different kinds of institutions. Cultural or art organizations are fine. I've also seen other kinds of research centers, archives, libraries, museums. Really the only limitations are that it cannot be a for-profit business. It cannot be an American branch campus. It really depends. I have seen government organizations also serve as host institutions. So it really depends on the award. If you are if you're not sure, reach out to me. Another limitation that I've seen, and we can check with the host country to confirm, but it would usually need to be a university. We do not see a lot of applicants partner with primary or secondary schools. Okay. Do you suggest that an applicant has multiple letters of invitation since you can only apply for one institution? So to clarify what I said earlier, you can pursue multiple letters of invitation, but you can only include one in your application, with a few exceptions. If you're applying to the Africa Regional Research Award, you'll need to include a letter from each country that you're proposing to go to. In South Africa, we do allow applicants to partner with more than one institution, and I'm going to get into much more detail about that later in the slide. And in the case of South Africa, you can include two letters of invitation, but other than that, you would really only want to include one letter of invitation and one host institution that you would be working with. And then does it matter who sends the letter of invitation from the institution? Really, it doesn't. We always recommend that applicants try to get the letter from the person that they'll be most closely collaborating with, but it can also come from a department chair, a dean, an international office. It can really come from whoever at the host institution. Okay, I want to keep going because I want to make sure that I'm getting through all of my slides. So to select the right award, I'm going to discuss the award highlights in the region in just a moment, but I encourage you to browse the catalog on your own. You can narrow down your search by region, country, discipline, keyword, all of which is done through the advanced search feature. Discipline preferences are typically listed in the award description, but the region also offers all discipline awards in almost every country, which are open to scholars in every field. When you're searching the catalog, we recommend thinking about the relevance of your expertise and project to the host country. So if you're in between a couple of awards, ask yourself, how will the host country benefit and what do you hope to achieve while on your grant? And if you're able to answer those questions more easily for one country over the other, choose the one where you're able to make a stronger argument for the host country's benefit. I'm asked all the time about where I think an applicant will be most competitive or which awards are most competitive. The simple answer is that these award descriptions are written by the host countries. They're describing exactly what they're looking for. So scholars will be most successful in countries where their skills match the desired specializations of the host country. So broadly speaking, this is a competitive application process. So your proposal needs to be three things: clear, concise, and compelling. My advice on submitting a competitive application is on the screen here. Address the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding. Use the phrase promote mutual understanding somewhere in your application. It will be to your benefit. Keep in mind that the host country plays a role in selecting projects, so make sure you're speaking to them directly and discussing why you chose to apply to their country and how your project applies specifically there. As a Fulbrighter, you're essentially serving as a citizen diplomat, so you should discuss your ability to succeed in that role. Demonstrated flexibility and adaptability are also critical, particularly for applicants to this region. While grants typically do go pretty smoothly, we have seen situations in the past where applicants, they plan to conduct research at a particular archive, and then when they arrive in the country, it suddenly is closed for the summer for construction. You're going to be put into situations like this where you're going to face cultural misunderstandings or run into a snag in your research plan. And we need to know that you're not going to, lose your head and run screaming back to the U.S. if it happens. And then finally, impact. This part of the application is often overlooked, which is, in my opinion, the biggest mistake you could make in your application. You need to talk about the multiplier effect. What does this grant mean for you personally? What does it mean for your home institution? And then most importantly, what does it mean for the host country and the host institution? How are you planning to engage with the host community, build capacity, mentor faculty, and so on? Make sure you're addressing that in your application. So the most important thing to note in terms of the timeline is the deadline, which is September 16th. We pushed the application deadline back. It used to be August 1st, but we moved it to September 16th. Then there will be a series of U.S.-based reviews in which your application is first reviewed by IIE staff. We do a technical review to make sure that all of your application materials are appropriate and that they fit within the page limits, that you're eligible for the award that you're applying for, and so on. You may hear from us if there are any issues or if you submit a 20-page CV, you'll hear from us and we'll say, please cut this down to 6 pages. From there, your application is reviewed by the Discipline Review Committee. So those committees meet in the U.S., in Washington, D.C., and discuss, these are your peers, so people that are in the same discipline as you, and they will either recommend or not recommend your application for further review in the host country, and the review criteria, which are on our website, are what they are reviewing the applications on. And then applications are notified around December if their applications are recommended for further review abroad. If they are, the applications are batch sent to the countries in question, to the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and then finally to the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. The time frame for notification is made on a rolling basis, and so it ranges pretty widely from country to country and from year to year. Usually, the earliest that anyone would hear would maybe be March or April, but we do see other applicants being notified in May and June. Okay, so I want to jump into the region and talk about some of the specific opportunities. So I want to note here that all awards to Sub-Saharan Africa, with the exception of our two awards to South Africa and this award, the Africa Regional Research Award, they are all either teaching or teaching research awards. That means that applicants are expected to propose a teaching project or a combination of teaching and research activities, not exclusively research. If you are planning on only conducting research, no teaching component, then you will want to apply to the Africa Regional Research Program. For this award, scholars propose a single country or multi-country project which they would conduct either over the course of one continuous grant or as a flex grant. What is a flex grant? The flex grant is designed for scholars who require multiple visits to the host country. So this option allows grants to be conducted over shorter segments over two academic years. So, and this would preferably be during the fall or spring semesters when there are going to be people on campus. So for example, you could spend 2 months in Ghana, 2 months in Sudan, and 2 months in Namibia, all in one spread, or you can spread it out over 1 or 2 years, or you can go to Ghana and you'll go for 3 months in fall of 2020, and then another 3 months in fall of 2021. There are lots of possible ways to, you know, make that combination work. So for Flex, not all countries are eligible for Flex. I mean, this award is the Africa Regional Research Program, so any country that we have an active Fulbright program in is eligible. To find out which countries are eligible, just go to the award catalog, the catalog of awards, and you can search just regional. You can look at Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, and it'll pull up a list of all the countries that are offering awards. If you do not see a country listed there, for example, Togo or Chad, we do not have active Fulbright programs in those countries, and so if we don't have an active Fulbright program in that country, then you would not be able to apply to go there via the Africa Regional Research Program. If you want to conduct research in South Africa, you'll want to apply for one of our two awards in South Africa, which allow research-exclusive projects. The Africa Regional Research Program does not allow research in South Africa, so there is not a possibility of combining South Africa and several other countries to do an Africa Regional Research Award. You would either need to go to South Africa only via the South Africa Awards, or a combination of you know, two, three, one other countries outside of South Africa via this award. Very few awards offer the Flex option in Africa. That would really only be Guinea, Uganda, and the Africa Regional Research Award. The rest do not offer Flex for the individual country awards. So the Africa Regional Research Program has two overall objectives. One is to increase and develop new contacts and intellectual ties between U.S. and African communities. And two is to contribute to scholarship on Africa. The most competitive proposals will be those that describe a significant and achievable research project and that demonstrate commitment to developing scholarly relationships with African faculty. A PhD is required for this award, and an applicant needs a letter of invitation from each host country. Evidence of scholarly research after obtaining your PhD or other terminal degree in your field for the proposed project is also required. Keep in mind that though you'll invest primarily in collaborative research, long-term impact is one of the hallmarks of the Fulbright program, so consider ways to engage students and local stakeholders in your research. Make plans to share your results in a guest lecture or by leading seminars on research methods. Most scholars partner with universities as a host, but other institutions such as NGOs, cultural organizations are also permissible for this award. So a popular topic for this part of the world is what sort of language requirements are expected. Host universities in the Francophone and Lusophone Africa are eager to engage with scholars, and each award offers guidance on what level of French or Portuguese is required to be competitive for an award. This applies specifically to teaching and teaching research grants. In most cases, where there is some level of proficiency required, applicants will be asked to complete the language proficiency report. In many cases, you do not need a language requirement if you're teaching for example, in American studies. So that is something to keep in mind if you teach American studies, American literature, TOEFL. For research, you will need to have the language skills appropriate to successfully complete your project. If you're working with bilingual collaborators or looking through archives, the language you will need would differ than what you would need if you were conducting interviews or collecting primary data in rural areas. So think about those challenges, what you need to be successful, and how you can use your time between now and 2020 to address any deficiencies. So now let's go on to regional highlights. We offer 44 awards in Sub-Saharan Africa this year. I won't be going over all of them in great detail, but I will list them all today. And I want to give a peremptory warning that I'm not going to be going into stipend amounts for each country. You can discover that on your own by visiting the catalog and navigating over to the award benefits tab. The catalog really is your best friend. Anything that you need to know is there. So, you know, make sure that you are thoroughly reading those award descriptions. And then generally, in the region, I just want to mention that a PhD or other terminal degree is going to be required for almost all awards, with the exception of just a couple. So check the award descriptions to make sure that you're eligible for the award that you're hoping to apply.
In Western Africa, we offer all disciplines awards in Ghana, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, and Niger. When I say all disciplines, that means that they accept applications in any and all academic disciplines, so there will be some discipline preferences listed in the award descriptions. So make sure that you're using the catalog to its full potential by using a discipline and keyword search to see whether, you know, for example, if you're an engineer, Ghana may say engineering is a priority discipline, and then that would be an award that you would be especially competitive for. However, even if your discipline isn't listed, the commission is very happy to consider your application. In Burkina Faso, we have two very specialized awards. For the first award, two local universities are looking for experts in business administration, economics, law, medical sciences, or philosophy for a 9-month combination teaching research grant. In addition to teaching undergraduate and graduate courses and conducting, you know, your research in your area of specializations, Fulbrighters in Burkina Faso help with developing curriculum and institutional research capacity. One thing that I have seen sort of become a trend, a lot of people proposing faculty mentorship workshops where they are sort of teaching local faculty how to get their research published in academic journals. I want to note that, you know, with teaching, the teaching component does not necessarily always need to take the form of courses. Of course, depending on the award, you need to check the award descriptions. But we do also consider a series of workshops or seminars to be teaching as well. For the Business Administration, Law, or Medical Sciences Award, fluency in French is required. And a great thing about this award is that the contact information for the host institutions is already listed in the award description, so you already have a contact identified for when you seek out a letter of invitation. There's also an award hosted by the International Institute for Water and Environmental Engineering, which is looking for experts in water and sanitation engineering, civil engineering, or environmental science. So this is a 10-month combination teaching research grant. For this award, the teaching is all going to be in English. Some French proficiency is useful for daily living, but not required. And contact information for the host institution is also listed in this award, which, you know, makes your life easy. I'm seeing a couple of questions about grant length. You know, is there any flexibility? So where you see 9 months or 10 months listed as the award, you know, the grant length, that is not flexible. They really do, a lot of countries in this region really do want scholars that are going to be able to come for a full academic year. So for 9 or 10 months, if there are some awards that say 5 or 10 months or 6 or 10 months, and so there are some opportunities that offer only one semester or, you know, shorter term grants. But speaking broadly about the region, they really do prefer longer grants. Continuing in Western Africa, there are more all disciplines awards in Sierra Leone, Benin, Senegal, Guinea, and Cote d'Ivoire offers three specialized awards. I want to highlight Guinea for a couple of reasons. One, this is one of the few awards in sub-Saharan Africa which offers that flex option. And two, the Fulbright program in the country really aims to serve as more of a consultative system for the country's education system. So Fulbright scholars, you know, that have expertise in their fields, that they can leverage to go beyond simple classroom teaching. So in Guinea, Fulbright scholars regularly serve as consultants to government ministries, you know, are really able to make real contributions to advance Guinea's development. So our partners in the country recognize the quality of American scholarship and are really eager to harness this quality for positive change. The disciplines of particular interest are economics, entrepreneurship, business development, public policy, mining and extractive industry management,
development and development policy, public health, conflict prevention, media studies, agriculture, human rights, and peace and security studies. Pretty long list there. The embassy encourages interested candidates to contact them. Their information for the public affairs section of the embassy is listed in the award description. If you have any questions about the program or the country or host institutions, they really hope that you'll consider choosing Guinea for your Fulbright service, because what is possible there is limited only by your imagination and your energy. Moving on to Central and Eastern Africa, we have more All Disciplines Awards in Cameroon, Tanzania, Sudan, Uganda, Kenya, and Ethiopia, with three specialized awards in Rwanda. In this region, I want to highlight Sudan. We are really excited to be sending our first Fulbright U.S. scholar to Sudan for the first time in 20 years. The program had been suspended for almost two decades. Universities are very eager to restart the Fulbright Scholar Program and see increased partnerships and cooperation with U.S. experts and universities. Overall, the country offers an opportunity for cutting-edge research in a variety of disciplines and opportunities to increase the institutional capacity of the university systems in the country to deliver quality education to students. The potential for impact here is huge. Applications are especially encouraged in disciplines such as science and technology, food security, water and resources management, environment, tropical agriculture, neglected diseases, renewable energy, marine sciences, cancer research, nanotechnology, and university administration. I also want to highlight one of the awards in Cameroon, which would be either a teaching only or a combination teaching and research opportunity for 10 months. Applicants combining teaching and research are advised to plan for an 80-20 teaching to research ratio. This is another award in which the names and contact information of the invitation writers at each eligible host institution are already listed. A question I'm seeing pop up a lot is, what is the balance of teaching to research? Unless it is stated elsewhere in the award description, like in Cameroon, there's an 80 to 20 teaching ratio already outlined. That balance of teaching to research is something that you would work out with your host institution. There would be no requirement on the Fulbright end. So just make sure that you're discussing your teaching load with the host institution, and then in your project statement, sort of elaborate, I'm foreseeing a 50-50 research to teaching split, or 60-40, or 80-20, or whatever you decide to work out with your host institution. Moving on to Southern Africa, Mauritius, Mozambique, Namibia, and Zimbabwe all offer All Disciplines Awards. While there are also several specialized awards in Mozambique and Mauritius. I want to highlight Mauritius because I feel like it's an often overlooked host country. It is like such a hidden gem. The award is 6 to 10 months, so it does offer some flexibility for those who can't be there for the full 10 months. You can go for 6 months. There's also no language requirement, although French is helpful. Mauritius is a really picturesque island nation. It's in the Indian Ocean. It performs really well in the ease of doing business rankings. It was in 2018, it was ranked by the World Bank as the best in Africa for ease of doing business. So areas of interest there are pretty broad: maritime security, economic development specializations such as intellectual property rights, blockchain, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and then political engagement, especially of women and youth and gender-based violence. Zambia and Botswana don't offer All Disciplines Awards. These countries offer a variety of specialized awards. In Zambia, the Journalism and Broadcasting Award is worth highlighting. It is one of the few awards in the catalog that does not require a PhD or terminal degree. And then in Botswana, I want to highlight the Public Health Award. There are three possible hosts listed along with contact information for each. So scholars with a PhD in at least five years of postdoc teaching or professional experience at a university or a think tank are preferred. And there are a variety of very specific fields that each university, the University of Botswana, Botho University, and Boitekanelo University, in disease informatics at one, and HIV AIDS at another. So if you are an expert in public health, I do really encourage you to pursue the Public Health Award in Botswana. All right, and here is our final slide before we get to the question and answer section. In Madagascar, we have a 9-month award at the University of Antananarivo. Sorry, guys, not long name. So all disciplines are welcome there, particularly American civilization and literature, particularly comparative lit and intercultural and gender-based approaches to American literature, society, and culture. And then the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland, is another really great opportunity. It's situated right between South Africa and Mozambique. It is actually Africa's last absolute monarchy, and it also does actually have the highest HIV/AIDS prevalence in the world. The universities in the country are facing some challenges, but they're also really critical players in addressing the country's problems and contributing to the future development of the kingdom. In this environment, scholars would have the opportunity to make a really significant impact during their grant period in the country. Here we have two specialized awards in business administration and sociology. The business administration is 6 to 10 months, and sociology is 10 months. And for this country also, the contact info for letters of invitation is listed in the award descriptions. And last but not least, certainly not the least number of applicants, as it's our most popular and competitive country in the region, is South Africa. So these are 6 to 10 month grants, which allow research, teaching, or a combination of teaching and research. A letter of invitation is required here, and an affiliation is possible at any of the 23 universities listed within the award description. Applications can be submitted to any campuses of these institutions, including campuses in a city or province other than the main campus location. Applicants to South Africa can propose a sharing between institutions in the same geographic area. These applications need to include one or more letters confirming the willingness of the relevant parties to share the scholar. Placing U.S. Fulbright scholars at a range of South African universities is a priority for the embassy. Applications involving historically disadvantaged South African educational institutions will be given a priority. And then please note that, you know, we receive way more applications than we're generally able to award to the Western Cape. So I would really encourage applicants to South Africa to look at institutions outside of the Western Cape. I also strongly encourage anyone interested in South Africa to read the country description very carefully, as there's quite a bit of relevant information there about the country priorities. And then while you're exploring opportunities within South Africa, you know, spend some time also thinking about neighboring countries in Southern Africa. The most compelling Fulbright applications are the ones where your training and experience and type of project are the most appropriate match for a host country. So we're not attempting to dissuade you from South Africa if your proposal is well placed there. But if you have more flexibility in your research, if you're looking to compare similar issues found in Malawi or Zambia or Eswatini, or you have had other enthusiastic conversations about teaching with other universities, you definitely do consider other Southern Africa destinations. Okay, it looks like we're reaching the end of our hour here, but we can go over time to answer your questions. I'll stay online for a while. So I'm going to open up the virtual floor to any questions. Like I said earlier, if your question is very specific to your situation, I'll contact you after the webinar to follow up privately, or you can reach out to me. And I've listed a couple of frequently asked questions on the screen. Okay, lots and lots of good questions here. Okay, I'm seeing like some questions. Can I affiliate with an NGO in this particular country? Can I do this in this particular country? Please go to the award descriptions and check. If you aren't sure, my contact information is listed in the award descriptions, and we'll be able to clear that up. Is there a resource we can get in contact with to assist us in ensuring we have a high-quality application? So by attending this webinar, I think this was probably a pretty good resource for putting together a strong application. I would also recommend that you take a look on our website to see if there's a Fulbright Scholar Liaison on your campus. The Fulbright Scholar Liaisons are definitely able to speak more to the program and perhaps if even take a look at your application. You can also check to see if there are any Fulbright alumni on your campus to see if they would be interested in being readers. I want to know, a lot of applicants ask if I or someone else at IIE can read their application and give them feedback, and we are not able to do that. If you have specific questions or you want to point us to a particular paragraph and ask, is this answering that particular review question, we can help with small pieces of it, but you can't send your application to us for a full review before the application deadline. I arrived late. Would it be possible to listen to the whole webinar after the conference has ended? So yes, this is being recorded, and I'm going to be uploading it onto our website. It usually takes about a week to get it up there, but you will be able to rewatch later or even share with others if you want to. Okay, are there published rates of acceptance for different countries? As you can see on our screen, we cannot share that information. It's FFSB policy. However, typically you can use your common sense to guess which countries are most competitive. I feel comfortable saying that South Africa is definitely our most competitive award, but you can usually think about where there's a lot of research in your field, a lot of research on Africa being done, Ghana, Nigeria tend to be a little bit more competitive. Some countries that tend to be a little bit less competitive, I would say that Sudan in particular, because it's a new award. So I would be very excited to see a more robust number of applications to Sudan in the upcoming cycle. Is there a word limit on the statement in the application? So no, there's not a word limit. There's a page limit. And use your best judgment with font sizes and things like that. We don't have any requirements. I would obviously say, try to have the font size be like at least 12 so that, not at like 6 so that you can fit a lot in. Just make sure that it's easily readable by the reviewers. If the award info says we're required to contact the U.S. Embassy to identify a host institution in the host country, can we get the if an award says you need to reach out to the U.S. Embassy, that contact information would already be listed in the award description. If it's not, you can reach out to me. So many of the grants are at, okay, this is a question. Many of the grants are at the same time seeking specific profiles. While remaining open, is it best to apply to countries that are specifically interested in one's own field? So I would say that, yes, it would be, if, for example, you're interested in going to Mauritius and you already know that, you're a cybersecurity expert, you should apply to a country that lists your discipline as a priority. However, even if your application, your discipline is not listed as a priority, it may just be that the host country or the commission didn't even really think about that as a priority that year. And oftentimes, too, they will list certain priorities, but they won't receive any applications in those fields. That does happen sometimes. So use your best judgment. If you happen to have a really strong relationship with an institution in a particular country, or you know your research is really focused on a particular country, you know you don't have to choose another country in the region just because you don't see your discipline listed there. Okay. Could you repeat which countries allow the Flex Award for the regional program? So if you are doing the Africa Regional Research Award, all countries that we have active programs in that are listed in the catalog, you can use Flex for any of the countries. However, if you're applying only to go to one particular country for a teaching research award, Flex is only available in Guinea and Uganda. Okay, I'm just reading through your questions. Well, this is a good one. Would previous research experience in the country be seen as an advantage or disadvantage? So I think it really depends on how you frame it. If you have already spent an extensive amount of time in the country that you're proposing to go to, what you'll want to do is, A, you need to talk about what new connections you're going to be getting out of this grant. The purpose of the Fulbright program is to, you know, form connections, promote mutual understanding. So I would recommend, you know, keep in mind that the reviewers are going to be thinking, wow, did this person already spent 5 years working at this university? Why do they want Fulbright to send them back? What are they going to accomplish that they weren't already able to accomplish in 5 years that they spent there? So make sure that that's something the reviewers will think about. So make sure that you're talking about those new connections, new developments. Maybe you're going to be working in a completely different part of the country than you worked in before. I think it's also wise to sort of frame your previous experience as an advantage. I'm talking about your cultural knowledge, the fact that because you've already spent some time there, you have strong institutional connections that are going to make it possible for you to hit the ground running when you get into the country, things like that. So it really depends on how you frame it, but make sure that you are emphasizing those new accomplishments and new connections you would be making that you weren't able to accomplish in previous research visits to the country. Okay. I'm taking a look at your questions. Some of them are really specific. I see a couple of questions like, which award is looking for someone interested in this? Which country is interested in someone in this? Really, you should be using the catalog of awards to find that out. When you go into the catalog, you can search by discipline. So you can search by art or you can search by engineering to see which countries have listed your discipline as a priority. You can also do a keyword search. For example, if your field is electrical engineering, you can type in electrical engineering and it'll pull if there are any countries that are interested in electrical engineering. So make sure that you're using the catalog for those questions. Are federal government employees eligible to apply? So it depends on what branch of the federal government that you worked for. If you have either worked for or been a contractor for the State Department, then there are some limitations. But if it's another branch of the federal government, then there's no problem with that, as long as you meet all of the rest of the eligibility requirements. If you do work for the State Department, reach out and I can talk more about what those limitations are. Okay. Is there a published application evaluation criteria? Who reviews the applications? So yes, the review criteria are on our website. So if you just go to CIES.org, you'll be able to sort of explore the website. The review criteria are very easy to find. In terms of who reviews the application, so the review process is sort of done in two parts. One is in the U.S. review, and the other is in the host country. In the U.S., we have a panel of Fulbright alumni that are in your discipline, and they will be reviewing the app. Each of them review about 75 to 80 applications per cycle, and they'll be using the review criteria on our website specifically. Once the application goes to the host country, that review process really varies from country to country. It's usually embassy staff, a panel of embassy staff, or the group that works in the public affairs section of the U.S. Embassy that will be reviewing the application. Sometimes they'll also pull in a local academic every year they sort of do it differently, but the people that are reviewing in the host country do tend to be sort of a mix of Americans that are working in the embassy or local people that are working in the embassy. Make sure that while the first part of the review is going to be done by academics, the second part is likely to be non-academics. So make sure that your application, your language is not too jargony. Make sure that it's accessible to someone outside of your discipline and to someone that is outside of academia in general. Okay. Is there a limit as to how many grants are given per country in a given year? So yes and no. In the award descriptions, you'll see the number of grants given per year. Usually it'll say 1 or 2 or up to 10. That's really meant to be more of an estimate. Sometimes we award more, sometimes we award fewer. If we happen to, not receive any strong applications for a particular award, we won't just award it because we need to fill a spot. If that answers your question. How does the in-country review work for the Africa Regional Research Program when proposing work in 3 countries? So if you are applying for that award, we ask for feedback from all 3 countries. So they will be reviewing your application based on the review criteria on the website, but with a particular emphasis on its feasibility in the country. So, particularly looking at, is this person going to a part of the country that they can conduct this research in? They'll also be looking at impact. They provide their feedback to us about which, each application, what their thoughts are. And the ultimate decision is made by the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs based on the review criteria that we get, the review comments that we get from the host countries. A question about joint applications. If you and a spouse are both applying and are in different fields, is this possible? Yes, it is possible. So we do not allow joint applications, so you cannot both apply on the same application form. You would need to apply separately. It depends. I have seen in some cases where a husband and wife or partners both apply to go to the same country and both are selected. I have also seen cases where one applies and the other applies and not both of them get it. But in that case, you would still qualify as a dependent to your spouse and would still be able to get some funding to go to the country. It just wouldn't be as a Fulbrighter to do your research. But I have seen it happen where both have been selected, so it is possible. My interest, the country that I am looking at says it needs a PhD or terminal degree. I'm pursuing a master's and will have one by August of 2020. Am I eligible? So in your particular case, no, you would need to finish your terminal degree by, I believe the cutoff date is March of 2020. So you would need to apply after you've finished your degree or the next cycle. All of that is listed in the eligibility requirements on our website. Okay. So there are a couple of more questions. Okay, so some of these are really specific. So for those of you, and I'm sure you already know who you are, please reach out to me at the email listed on the screen, and I can sort of work out some of these more specific issues with you. And I see one question from a former dean, would I qualify for an administrator award? We don't offer the Fulbright International Education Administrator Seminars in Africa, the IEA awards, if that's what you're specifically referring to. But if you are a former dean with a terminal degree and you're interested in doing some higher education administration project, Guinea would probably be a really good match for you. But reach out to me. When you do reach out to me, if all of you, if you're reaching out to me, send me your CV when you reach out so that I can make eligibility determinations. Okay. So I am, unfortunately, we're way over time, so I'm going to need to end the webinar. But, you know, if I wasn't able to address your question, just email me directly. You can also visit our website for more information. I'll be archiving this webinar in the next couple of days if you want to listen to it again. Or if I've seen a couple of you want the how to submit a competitive application slide, that'll be uploaded and you can see it there. Actually, I can backtrack to that screen really quickly, so if you want to take a screenshot. Okay. So thank you, everyone, so much. On behalf of IIE, I want to say thank you for taking the time to attend this webinar today. I really look forward to assisting you as you put together your application and to reading your applications when they're submitted. Again, the application deadline is September 16th. Thank you, everyone. Have a lovely rest of your day.